Welcome to Terrible People Doing Terrible Things. I'm Amanda, and I'm a licensed psychologist who enjoys studying the worst of humanity.
And I'm Laura, a psychology and horror addict who loves looking up terrible things and talking about them. So before we started the episode today, Amanda, I wanted to talk to you about misinformation and how misleading things
just are right now.
Yeah, how messed up things are right now.
Yeah.
So I saw an article recently, and it was titled "Teaching People How to Spot Bad Science is a Public Health Tool."
It is, man.
Yeah, and I thought this was something that we should discuss. How do you feel about, like, the current state of how, like, the general public gets information?
It concerns me a lot.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, there's a lot of, like you said, misinformation out there, and people don't realize it, or they don't care. I think it's a mix of the two. I think most people don't realize it, and that maybe a very select few just don't care, and think it's good to stir shit up and promote conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that's true. And I feel like, you know, you get, like, all kinds of misinformation, especially when it comes to medical things, especially right now with the pandemic. You know, with, you know, oh, this will cure it, that will cure it.
And it's not that bad, and it's not real, and people aren't dying, and my mask is going to somehow make it worse.
Why do we lie so much? Why is there so much is it just because the internet is so easy to access and so easy to just put your own opinion on? Are there really that many fucking assholes in the world?
Well, I think it's a combination of having almost too much access to unchecked information. And there's also, have you heard of the term confirmation bias?
I think I have. Yeah, I've read that somewhere.
So confirmation bias, I think, is playing into this in a very significant way right now. And confirmation bias is just the phenomenon where, like, I am going to seek out information that lines up with my beliefs.
Oh, okay. So, like, specifically, like, I believe this. It's like when people argue. So there's a scientific method that details exactly how you can find information that is proven and not just, you know, I said this.
Not just speculation or someone's grandmother says to drink elderberry juice to cure the flu.
Right. But then you also have the problem of, like, this is how things that are, like, racist and stuff like that wind up. Like, you have people who are like, oh, I'm racist, I'm going to post all this stuff. And as a free country, we can't limit that. You know what I mean? Like, who are we to say you can't put that on there? But how do we get people not to believe shit like that?
You have to have better systems in place to check the accuracy of the information. And then I think that when it comes to things regarding racism and prejudice, that's where hopefully the protections we have around hate speech, or not protections, the limitations of free speech that we have related to hate speech, I would hope would come into play to shut some of this down. But it just seems like things are going unchecked at this point to a large extent.
It seems like it's getting out of control.
It is, and I think that a lot of social media groups are just now finally
cracking down
on it. But I think we've let it go and grow out of hand for too long. And I think that, again, like-minded people listen to like-minded people. So people who have the same beliefs, they're friends with people that have the same beliefs.
Right. If you're seeking out the information you want, then you'll never, like, I guess if we taught people to, like, compare and contrast information.
Well, and just to be critical thinkers and not to be afraid of the fact that people are going to have different opinions from you.
Or afraid of the fact that you might find out something you believed is wrong. That's happened to me before.
Absolutely. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should be saying that.
No, like CJ is really, you know, he's always on Reddit, and he's just always looking at stuff and getting information. And I don't really do that. But, like, I've said some things to CJ where he's just like, no, that's wrong.
Yeah, like, I've had the same experience with Ward, and it's nice because he does it in a way. He doesn't act like I'm an idiot.
Oh, no.
He doesn't insult my intelligence. He doesn't go on an angry tirade. He does what we need to do, where you sit down and you have a conversation and you point out the issues.
And the person receiving that needs to be receptive of it, because, like, when CJ tells me stuff, you know, I'm receptive to the fact, like, okay, I was wrong. You know, what I thought was wrong, what I was taught was wrong, whatever. You know, whatever the case may be. But you got to be open to change your mind, man.
And we need to teach kids that it's okay to be wrong.
Yeah. Like, what's the, like,
it's okay to not know something. It's okay to be confused. It's okay to ask for help and clarification.
It's okay to advocate something, or, you know, vote for someone and then change your mind and not like it. Yeah. And it's okay. You can say that.
We are not good at allowing ourselves to say shit.
No.
I made a mistake when it comes to elected officials.
Yeah.
Particularly the presidency, regardless of who you support.
And it doesn't matter who you support. Just do the right fucking thing now.
Yeah.
You know, if you realize that you're, and if you're not happy with it, if you're like, oh, wow, I don't really like this.
Yeah.
Then change your mind. You'll be much happier. Yeah. We'll all be much happier.
You're allowed to do that introspection and change your mind and grow a little bit.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that's it's a major problem with misinformation and how just the stupid things we hear today get spread.
On the topic we're going to talk about today, this is why people don't question cult leaders, I think, too.
Exactly. So speaking of that, let me tell you about Jonestown, which is a remote settlement that was established by the People's Temple, an infamous cult.
Yes.
So I'm sure you've heard of it. Many people have heard of it. But, you know, I don't know that everybody knows exactly what went down.
Like the story. Yeah.
So let's start out with some background on the People's Temple and its founder, Jim Jones.
Good old Jim Jones. Good old JJ.
Good old Jim Jones. JJ. I'm going to call him that from now on. JJ was born May 13th, 1931 in Crete, Indiana, to parents James Jones and Lynetta Putnam.
Okay.
Putnam. Sorry.
Putnam.
Putnam.
There's a Putnam County, Kentucky, I think.
Oh, okay.
In my neck of the woods. So Putnam.
Putnam.
At least how we say it in the South. It's probably bastardized and not right.
But. Oh, I'm sure. Most things we say are. and this was during the Great Depression. So as you can imagine, like, the family struggled. It was not a fun time. And that actually caused them to move to Lynn, Indiana, into a small shack that had no plumbing.
Okay.
So we're really just not, you know, they're not doing well.
Not starting out so great for Jim here.
Right. But which most people, you know, during the Great Depression did not have a good experience.
Yeah.
So Jones struggled to make friends, and he was often regarded as the weird kid. He read and enjoyed the works of writers such as Stalin, Marx, Hitler, Mao, and Gandhi.
I'm okay.
And this is at a young age, so, you know, didn't really fit in with the other children.
Well, no, he's reading, like, all these manifestos and government kind of philosophy.
Yeah, outside the range of, like, what the other children are into right now.
Yeah.
And the other children recalled that he was obsessed with religion and death, which sounds like a lot of people that we know.
Yeah, sounds kind of familiar.
A little familiar. It was also rumored amongst the local children that he often held funerals for animals in his yard and stabbed a cat to death. Now, you know how I feel about cats. I'm not okay with that.
No.
But also, it's children's rumors. So that could just be something that they made up.
Yeah. But I wonder where he was getting the dead animals. Was he killing all of them?
I don't know.
Okay.
It doesn't really get into that, but kids make rumors, but it's often rumors out of the other kid doing something weird anyway.
Yeah, it kind of grows from there.
Yeah, so he just, you know, he had a little reputation as a child.
Little funeral home director.
little funeral home director. So JJ also believed deeply in racial equality from a very young age.
Okay.
Jones claimed that his father was part of the Ku Klux Klan. Or everyone's favorite group of idiots in hoods.
Yeah, everyone's favorite men wearing sheets, grown men wearing bed sheets.
Wearing bed sheets, hiding their faces like a bunch of pussies. And they often fought about the issues of race. So obviously they did not have, you know, similar views. And he stated that he stopped talking to his father for actually like a few years after he would not allow one of Jones's black friends into the house.
Okay.
So really disapproving of racism.
Yeah, and really butting heads on this.
Really butting heads with his dad. So his mother and father separated, and he moved to Richmond, Indiana, with his mother.
Okay.
He graduated from high school in December 1948, and he was soon married right after that to Marceline Baldwin. No relation to the Baldwin brothers.
Oh, man.
In 1949. They moved to Bloomington, Indiana, where Jones attended Indiana Bloomington University.
Okay, so they were young. They were very young when they got married.
Yes, so this would put him at about 20.
Okay, yeah.
When he got married. And then, you know, they moved. And he was very impressed by a speech from Eleanor Roosevelt about the suffering of African Americans. So after he had heard the speech and, you know, they really got invested in this, he and his wife moved to Indianapolis, and this is where he would attend Indiana University. But then he took night classes at Butler University after dropping out of Indiana University.
Okay.
And he eventually got a degree in secondary education 10 years after he enrolled.
Also, like a school teacher degree?
Yeah, a school teacher degree, but not using it at all.
Okay, okay.
Like, period, not at all.
Yeah.
But, and it took him 10 years. So, you know, he had other things going on. He was a very active man. So in 1951, Jim and his wife have just moved to Indianapolis, and Jones starts going to meetings and gatherings for the Communist Party USA.
Okay, yeah.
Which is a Communist Party that was started in 1919 when the split in the Socialist Party of America happened after the Russian Revolution. So that's when that popped up.
Okay.
And obviously, this garnered a lot of harassment, especially, you know, during the McCarthy hearings, which was a series of hearings held by the U.S. Senate's Subcommittee on Investigations to investigate conflicting accusations between the U.S. Army and U.S. Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Okay.
Which we're not going to cover today.
Yeah, no. We're not going to get into that.
We're not going to get into that. But Jones and his mother went, and his mother was harassed at work by the FBI afterward, because it is a communist thing. This is during the time when communism was not okay.
Yeah. Was this the Red Scare? Was that kind of the term they would also use for this time because of the Russian communism and the Red Scare?
I'm not sure. I didn't read anything about that.
I'm not a big history buff.
Neither am I. I'm terrible.
I know enough to exist and have like semi-intelligent conversations about things, but that's the extent.
Yeah. Don't ever ask me like years of when things happen. So he became very frustrated, you know, they're getting harassed, kind of held down for their beliefs. So he thought, what can I do about all this prejudice and injustice against communists in the United States? So he wanted to demonstrate his beliefs, which was Marxism, a method of socioeconomic analysis that uses a materialistic interpretation of historic development.
Okay.
Don't ask me what that really means. I don't know. Sure. It goes along with the communist beliefs.
Well, and I also just hear it associated when people are talking about socialism. Mm-hmm. They seem to jump to Marxism, and then they seem to jump to communism.
Right, right, right.
With that fear.
So Jones decided that the way to help, you know, against prejudice and everything was like to join the church. So he's going to infiltrate the church.
Nice. It's like some undercover agent
of
socialism and Marxism.
I mean, honestly, not a bad plan of attack considering religion controls everything.
Yeah, but pretty much.
You know, sorry, this little of my conspiracy theorist escaped. Ha ha!
Yeah, you're safe. You're safe with us.
This is a safe place.
Safe zone.
Safe zone.
I'm triggered.
Oh, God. So in 1952, Jones became a student pastor at Somerset Southside Methodist Church.
Don't say that too fast. Somerset Southside Methodist Church.
Yeah, exactly. And around this time, he witnessed faith healing at the Seventh-day Baptist Church.
Of course he did. So Seventh-day.
Yeah, the ones where they push old people over and scream that they're healed. Those ones.
Yeah, push people down.
They do! It's like, Hadouken. You're healed. I'm like, I'm still blind. I don't know how that helped.
You're healed. And now you have a headache. You're blind with a headache. And
a broken
back
head.
Back is broken.
Push you over.
I'm going to push your ass over.
So, of course, he noticed that not only did this sort of display draw a large crowd, but also that it was quite popular and a good way to make money.
No, you don't say.
You don't say. Faith healing, a good way.
You don't say.
So once he realized this, he decided to throw a massive religious convention to take place in Cattle Tabernacle. And I really can't get over that name because cattle, like cattle for cows, but it's spelled different, like eager to follow. I had like a little moment when I read that. I was like, that's conspiracy theory. I don't like it.
Yeah. Just, yeah.
But it was really just the last name of the founder of the church.
Those conspiracy theory red flags were just like popping up and like bursting into flames for you everywhere. Yeah,
exactly. So the convention took place June 11th through the 15th in 1956. So he arranged to share the pulpit with a very famous Reverend William Branham, who was a healing evangelist and author. And there's a whole lot of information on him that we're not going to go into, but he was very, very popular, very large following.
Okay.
So after the convention, this is when Jones was able to create his own church. After going through many names, it eventually became known as the People's Temple Christian Church Full Gospel.
What? 6 words.
It's a lot, man. It's a mouthful. It was a mouthful. But it was initially an interracial mission.
Okay.
So Jones was frustrated by his congregation that was only white. And so he decided to branch off and make an interracial congregation where anybody could join. Okay. There was no segregation. There was none of that.
So again, tying back to his belief in racial equality and trying to fight against racial injustice.
So thus far, not the worst guy ever. He's into communism a little too much, but he truly believed in equality for the races. Yeah. Like, really believed.
He did possibly kill a cat, but...
I mean, yeah, but, you know...
You know, a lot of people do that, right?
This is right? The... right? You did that when you were a teenager, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That's definitely not one of the 3 signs of a serial killer.
Yeah, no.
Did you also set fires and pee in your bed?
I mean, probably peed in my bed at some point.
I for sure set fires.
Oh, man. So speaking of peeing in your bed, you didn't know this was going to be an offshoot story, did you?
Oh, please. I want this.
I think I was in 3rd grade. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the hell happened. I don't know if I was sick, but like 8-year-old me somehow pees her pants on the way to the restroom. And I had to come out and like signal through the little, you know, the little windows they had to your classrooms back in the day. Like,
yeah.
I had to kind of signal furiously in there. And someone told the teacher, thankfully, and she came out. And I was crying, and like, I don't even know if I was making sense. You know, I'm just probably like, I peed on myself. And they had to get me these other pants from the Lost and Found to wear the rest
of the day. Lost and Found pants, no!
Like, I hope I cleaned myself up a little bit. Like, I mean, I was at a school. I don't know, I was 8.
I hope I clean. No, you just smelled like piss the entire day.
No one prepared me for being an older child pissing on herself in public. So I don't know.
Girl, this is how you get nicknames, man.
Pee-pee Pants McClure coming through.
Pee-pee Pants McGee. Actually, I got a nickname once because my last name is close to burn.
Okay, yeah.
I got sunburnt.
Aww.
And I came into school and they called me Laura Burnty.
Burnty.
Burnty. Yeah. So that was fun. So kids are assholes.
And they're creative assholes, but they're assholes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So he often studied Father Divine, who was an African-American spiritual leader who claimed to be God.
Okay. I like the name Divine.
Right? Father Divine. Sounds like a drag queen.
There is a drag queen named Divine.
Is there? It should be Father Divine. I love it. I want a drag queen who dresses like a Catholic priest.
Like a pope?
Yeah. The pope or a Catholic priest.
Yeah.
And her name is Father Divine.
Father Divine.
And she's fucking fabulous.
Look at that bedazzled pope hat.
all right. That's going to be my alter personality now. So he actually spoke to Divine, and Divine told Jones personally to find an enemy and to make sure they know who the enemy is, as this would unify the group and make them subservient to him.
So someone was grooming Jones?
Sort of. Jones had been studying Father Divine for years since he was like younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had the opportunity to speak to him, and that's what Father Divine told him. Make them subservient to you.
Damn.
Yeah. So this is, right off the bat, showing some culty traits.
Yes. Well, and so have you seen pictures of Jim Jones?
Yeah, he's a weird-looking dude, and he's always wearing sunglasses.
And so he's always wearing sunglasses, and to me, he looks like a very tan Roy Orbison. Do you remember that musician?
No.
He had the song Pretty Woman
Walking Down. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's Roy Orbison. And like, I don't know, I went on this whole mental kind of thing where I was like, oh, and Roy Orbison was kind of like just a fat Elvis. Like at one point in his career, he became like fat Elvis.
So Jim Jones is Roy Orbison and then Jim. Yeah, we'll get into why Jim Jones wears sunglasses all the time.
Oh, later. I didn't know there was like a thing. I thought he was just trying to be cool.
I don't know that it's a specific, like actually proven, but we'll get into it.
Okay.
So we're showing some culty traits, you know, subservience, not really something you want in your church.
Yeah.
So he made his own congregation open to all ethnicities.
Okay.
So now, Amanda, it's time for a multiple choice question. So in order to raise money for the foundation of his church, Jim Jones sold what? A, magazines, B, monkeys, C, puppies, or D, candy?
Can I insert an E, and a choice E?
Sure. What's your choice E?
Dead cats.
No, incorrect. It's monkeys. He sold them door to door as pets.
Oh, so they were alive at least.
Yeah, but he's selling monkeys.
How do you become a monkey salesman, a door-to-door monkey?
I don't know. This guy is like weird, dude. He's got a weird life.
I'm in the wrong field. Like, I just keep learning.
I don't think so.
That I've made the wrong choices.
I don't know. Monkeys rip people's faces off. That's a lot of lawsuit liability.
That's a good point.
And like, I don't know exactly what kind of monkeys. I'm hoping it's like the little ones and not like chimpanzees, but you know. Who knows?
He comes to the door and his face is like ripped asunder and he's like, would you like to buy
sweet
monkey?
I'm dying. Please buy my monkey. Would you like to buy a monkey so I can found a cult? All right. So Jim Jones had a lot. I mean, he was a charismatic dude. He had a lot of friends in politics and he just had connections with everybody. He just really self-promoted. A lot.
Okay.
So after the mayor of Indianapolis made Jones the director of Human Rights Commission, which is a group set up to investigate, promote, and protect human rights, Jones began to find outlets for his views, such as radio and TV programs.
Can you imagine him as like a radio personality?
No, not at all.
It's like, I can just think of him being like the MC or whatever and like in the background, like, so this is Jim Jesus Christ Jones on the mic.
Jim J.C. Jones.
Jim J.C. Jones. And we're going to get back to talking about how my penis is a gift from God to all women.
Oh, that's exactly what it is, too. And, like, these cult leaders are like, my penis is magical.
Magical penis.
No. No. I don't believe you. You're a liar.
Well, we already know semen can't resurrect anybody. You liar.
Hey, exactly. We don't know this.
Don't try to pull that over on me again, Jim.
I'll never fall for that one again. So he starts getting on radio and TV, and this was against the advice of the mayor, who had advised that he keep a low profile. So they already know that this dude's like...
a little off his rocker.
But they like him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They like him.
Isn't that how it always is? Like, oh, he was a really nice guy. And then you find out like 20 years later, he murdered everyone, but people can't get over the fact that he was such a nice guy.
Well, here's this shitty thing too, is because Jim Jones's church actually did a lot of good. You know, and he actually did a lot of good, which is fucked up considering how this story ends. But they did do things such as they helped racially integrate churches, restaurants, the Indianapolis Police Department, among other establishments that they were able to integrate.
Okay.
And here's the weird thing. He even set up sting operations to catch local restaurants refusing to serve Black people.
Damn.
Yeah. So he's like trying to do good in the world. Yeah. However, he has a very militant view. And he thinks everybody should be, like, doing more.
Okay.
But in a violent way.
Like, he's willing to push violence.
You know, he's talking militias, you know, stuff like that to make a difference.
What is that? The means justifies the end.
Yeah, exactly. As you can imagine, this kind of made Jim Jones a little bit of a target.
Nah.
So...
Not during the 50s, 60s, and 70s. That doesn't make
right?
any sense.
So white-owned businesses were very critical of them. They were not having this shit. And a swastika was painted on his temple.
Mm.
A dead cat was thrown at his house after a threatening phone call. I don't know why we have so many freaking dead cats.
That's karma. That's fucking karma for
Isn't
killing
it?
That cat.
Isn't it?
There's like a woman in the neighborhood, like you or Jesus. And he killed one of your cats, and so you get back at him by throwing another dead cat.
Or he kills your cat, and you literally just take your cat's body and throw it at his porch.
Get like these dead cat cannons.
No, like shoot, a t-shirt cannon. He deserved it. I mean, let's be honest, he deserved it.
Fucking
Oh, yeah. So we got, you know, we got some threats going on. People aren't exactly a fan.
Yeah.
But as his congregation grew, so did the Joneses' family.
God damn.
Of course. He and his wife started adopting children from all over the place. And he would refer to his family as the Rainbow Family.
Rainbow. Reading Rainbow.
Reading Rainbow. he encouraged his congregation to adopt children from war-torn Korea. And he was very critical of the U.S. opposition to Kim Sung's 1950 invasion of South Korea. He called the U.S. opposition a war of liberation. Huh. He stated that the South Korea was living an example of all that socialism in the North had overcome.
Oh, man. So he, like, was all about North Korea.
He liked North Korea. Yeah, he's like, yeah, fuck yeah, North Korea. He's like, they're doing it right. And we all know they're not doing it right.
Well, they're not. I don't know how it started. Like, maybe it's possible it was, like, good.
No, I think it's been bad for a long time.
It's been bad? Okay. Yeah,
it's been bad for a long time. So here again, we see some of his not so great beliefs, like, yay, racial equality. And then you have like, communism.
Yeah, North Korea is amazing. No.
Yeah. So Jones began preaching at the temple about fears of a nuclear holocaust. He read that Belo Horizonte, Brazil was listed as a safe place in a nuclear war. So Jones traveled there with his family with the idea of setting up a new temple location.
Okay, so moving to Brazil.
Right. And they lived there for a couple of years. He explored the area, careful not to out himself as a communist in a foreign country. He spoke of apostolic communal lifestyle.
Okay.
So, you know, we're just a friendly, you know, commune moving into town. No big deal, guys. It's fine.
A bunch of bro apostles living in a community together with our rainbow children.
It's fine. It's fine. Unfortunately, the lack of resources in that area made it impossible to set up a congregation there. So he moved to Rio de Janeiro in mid-1963.
Rio de Janeiro.
Rio de Janeiro. He reportedly felt really guilty for leaving his congregation in the U.S. and the civil rights movement that was going on in Indiana behind.
Okay, yeah.
So, and one of his associate preachers told him that the temple would collapse without him soon. So he returned to Indianapolis.
Oh, I'd be so disappointed.
He's back!
Yeah. Like, damn it, this guy.
You'd be like, great, I thought you went to Brazil, son of a bitch.
Shit.
So he told his congregation that nuclear war would envelop the country on July 15th, 1967. And that would lead to a socialist Eden on Earth.
What?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Socialist Eden after nuclear war.
Has Chernobyl happened by this point?
No, I thought Chernobyl was early, wasn't it? It might have been around the same time.
I can't remember.
I don't know. We said we're both bad with history.
We have the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's see. Chernobyl. Nope, 1986. Fuck, we were way off.
Oh, wow, way off. Okay, so this guy knows fucking nothing about nuclear war.
Yeah.
he knows nothing. So he has the congregation move to Northern California for safety.
Okay.
So they begin moving to Redwood Valley, California.
So he's telling them that nuclear fallout is going to take over the country, but somehow result in like this utopian garden on Earth. And
socialists will live.
And they're going to live.
Yep.
Okay.
It's just going to be a happy fucking paradise, you know, with radiation poisoning. So it should be noted also that Jones kept his gospel from revealing that the beliefs of the temple were communism until the late 1960s. So a lot of people who are like following him are following him for the racial equality, which is a big thing right then, you know, and like, so he's taking advantage of the good he's trying to do. But then, you know, he started to introduce his communist teachings.
Okay.
He started mixing his teachings and revealing details of his apostolic socialism concept to the congregation.
So just kind of sneaking it, sprinkling it in there.
Yeah, just kind of like lightly sprinkling it in, kind of trying to warm them up to the idea of moving to freaking Brazil to a commune. Jones started like heavily denouncing Christianity. He rejected the Bible as being a tool to oppress women and non-whites. Cough, cough. Not wrong there.
Yeah.
And he denounced their quote-unquote sky god, which I thought was just funny.
As opposed to the ground god.
As opposed to he is God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is also when he began to preach about being the reincarnation of Gandhi, Father Divine, Jesus, Buddha, and Vladimir Lenin.
That's a lot. That's a lot of lives.
Also, he spoke with Father Divine. So how...
Is Father Divine dead now? Did he kill him like the cats?
I'm pretty sure Father Divine was still alive. So don't know how you're the reincarnation of that, you son of a bitch. So things were already getting weird, but like, damn.
Yeah.
Damn, dude. Within 5 years of relocating to California, the church grew exponentially. So it opened several branches in cities like San Fernando, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. So he's getting some momentum here. He's gathering some followers.
Moving on up.
Right. He then moved the temple's headquarters to San Francisco due to the limited expansion potential in Redwood Valley.
Okay.
So he wasn't going to be able to get big enough, so he's like, let's move to San Francisco. It also happened to be a major center for radical protest movements.
That's right.
Which goes right along with
his whole
spiel.
This is his thing, his shtick.
His shtick. As you could guess, Jones and the temple started to become influential in San Francisco politics. Because we know Jones is just that good. He's so charismatic.
You mean he likes to listen to the sound of his own voice?
Very much so. But you have to keep in mind, he's preaching equality, true, which is something that is needed and these people want.
Yeah.
So taking advantage of that for sure. And yeah, so he became influential in politics and he would actually host local politicians at his San Francisco apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So he's really becoming chummy and putting really himself tight in this whole environment.
Mm-hmm. And so many people praise him as being this amazing guy. Like people in politics. I mean, just everybody. Like all these people are just like, oh no, Jim Jones is amazing.
It would have been interesting to have lived during this time, heard all these people backing him, and then tried to hear how they're, you know, defending themselves or saying they didn't really mean that after all this shit goes down.
Yeah, right. They always deny after the fact. Like, no, that's not what I meant.
There's always a cover up, kind of like,
I didn't say that.
I was taken out of context. I'm not in pictures with Jim Jones, Epstein. Not Epstein.
Oh, God. So, in 1977, a reporter, Marshall Kilduff, brought a story to the New West magazine. And in the summer of that year, Jones and several hundred temple members abruptly decided to move to the temple's compound in Guyana.
Okay.
Just all of a sudden, this report is coming out. And this was after they had learned what the contents of the article were going to be.
Gotcha.
And that included accusations by former temple members who were physically, emotionally, and sexually abused by the church.
Yep.
Because, you know, we can't have a cult without all of this.
You can't spell cult without torture and abuse.
Right, exactly. So they moved to Guyana. And Jones naturally named his new settlement after himself. Thus, Jonestown was born.
Aw, it wasn't Rainbow?
No. Nope.
Rainbow Town?
Rainbow Family?
Sky God Rainbow Town?
No, we're fully, like, he's lost it at this point. Yeah. Like, he is God. He tells his people that, you know, he can be whatever they want him to be. Their savior, their brother, their father. He's just weird. He's a weird dude.
I can be a Pope drag queen named Divine if you guys really want. Probably has an outfit already picked out.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Now, before we detail what exactly went down at Jonestown, let's look into the real reasons that Jones fled to Guyana. So he was actually running from David Kahn, who was just a normal citizen who had a lot of dirt on Jones. So he had spent several years conducting his own investigation into Jones. You see, David actually knew several of the People's Temple's members, as he had attended a previous church with them.
Okay.
So at another congregation, he had been friends with these people. So when these members became disenchanted with Jones, they started complaining to David. They told him about fake healings, beatings, sexual assaults, child abuse, thefts, and numerous other crimes. And actually, a friend of David's named Larry Tupper, who was divorced from his wife, was actually concerned for his ex-wife and children as they were members of the temple. So he was able to provide information to David that he got through speaking to his wife, you know, just about like what was going on there, the child abuse, everything.
Yeah, how things were.
And he tried to convince his wife to leave the temple, but she refused. So she's there with his children.
This part gets to me when the women... It's one thing, I think, you know, for an adult to remain at a temple, but when you're in charge of the safety of your children...
A child. They have no choice in what's going on.
This is when I wish people would...
Snap out of it.
Leave, or at least let their kids leave.
Yeah.
Let them go live with the other parent, whatever the situation is.
Yeah. No, Jonestown is really, really into kids.
Yeah.
So...
Why are they always fucking into kids at these places?
Because that's how you make bigger. Like,
that's the future of your cult.
What about, like, the old leaders and stuff who wanted to, like, spread their seeds so everybody, like, afterwards was related to them?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's, like, some kind of fucking grandeur thing. Like, oh, my lineage is going to pass on for blah.
It's
going to
pass on a bunch of fucking mutations and genetic anomalies.
Right?
You're going to be growing, like, arms where you shouldn't have them.
All this information that Tupper had, he gave to David. And David then, he tried to convince his wife to leave the temple. She refused. And this is actually when David turned all of his information over to the U.S. Treasury Department and to four reporters who used the information in multiple newspaper articles.
Okay, so shit was about to be leaked.
To expose Jones.
Yeah.
For what he is. So they're trying to like put it out there and show that this guy is not okay. But, you know, he has a lot of following. He has a lot of people who really, really like him. Needless to say, the actions were discovered by Jones because he had little spies all over the place.
Well, he's got connections with everybody at this point.
Right. And he's extremely paranoid. Extremely paranoid at this point.
I am starting to wonder how many of these people had some form of
mental illness.
I mean, delusions for sure. Yeah. And then maybe even schizophrenia with all the paranoia.
Oh, it had to have been. Had to have been. Not all of them, obviously, but like something's going on.
Yeah. Some level of significant mental health issues.
Yeah. So when his paranoia began to get like really, really crazy, what better answer than to flee the country?
Yeah. Get the fuck out.
Yeah, they're like, peace. I'm going to go to another country. You can't tell me what to do.
You need bitches. I'm going to Disney. But mm-hmm. Disney and Rio de Janeiro.
Rio de Janeiro. So obviously the FBI becomes involved at this point. But unfortunately, they didn't really understand Jones like David did. And David would actually predict what would come a couple of days before it actually happened.
Okay.
So he knew, you know, he had been studying Jones for years, but unfortunately they just didn't.
And I guess the FBI didn't have enough information.
I don't know. They didn't take it seriously. They yeah. didn't, whatever happened, they just didn't know.
Well, I wonder too if cults weren't yet an issue or there weren't enough, you know, there hadn't been enough issues with cults at this point.
I don't know. There were several popping around. Like this was the time for cults and serial killers.
Were they, you know, had Manson happened yet? Had all these other cults
drank
the Kool-Aid yet?
Well, and years of research go into those cases as well. And
exactly.
And stuff later. So no, probably not. So they don't know how to fucking deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, great. And it's in another country as well.
That's true. So it's not even under their jurisdiction. Well, but it's American citizens.
Sort of is.
But at the, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We get there. Yep. We get there.
Okay.
So back to Jonestown. Jonestown was formerly known as the People's Temple Agricultural Project. So that's how they purchased it, you know, and that's what they were holding that land for.
Huh.
And it was actually started several years before the damning article would come out. So he was already starting this project long before this happened.
Before he needed to leave.
And it was promoted as a way to make like a socialist paradise and sanctuary away from the media scrutiny that they were getting in San Francisco. Now, I don't know why all that media scrutiny wouldn't cause you to think like, hey, maybe this isn't okay. But it didn't.
Because it's just everyone else, Laura. Everyone else is the problem. They don't understand.
You don't get me, Mom.
They don't understand me.
You don't get me.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. No members were permitted to leave Jonestown, which is a very communist thing of them to do.
Mm.
So they're not allowed to leave. So now you're in Guyana.
Yep.
And good luck.
You ain't leaving, buddy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, his reputation for setting up a racially mixed church would help him keep followers. Yet again, because he had worked so hard for racial equality, they really are focusing on how great this guy is.
Okay.
So by fall of 1977, a concern relatives group was created by temple defectors who still had family members at the temple. And Tim Stowen was actually one of the creators of the group. He was a member whose now ex-wife had sex with Jones on Stowen's encouragement because she was thinking of leaving.
So
her husband told her, go have sex with Jones and that'll make you not magic penis.
Yes.
Here we are. Fucking magic penis.
Magic penis will cure everything.
Yes.
And make you stick around. But
well,
so I guess he ended up regretting this?
Sort of.
Okay.
So her name was Grace, by the way, and she had a baby. And it was widely debated whether that baby was fathered by Jones or Tim.
Okay.
And it's said to be fathered by Jones, but, you know, who knows unless you actually do a paternity test.
Yeah.
Grace gave birth to the baby, and then Grace left the congregation in 1976, but Tim still had the baby. So Tim was ordered by Jones to take the baby to Guyana to avoid a custody battle with Grace.
Damn, okay.
So Tim takes the baby back to Guyana, and then Tim defected in June 1977, and the temple kept his child at Jonestown.
Shit.
So both parents defected from this cult, but they left their child.
They left their baby.
Yes, they left their baby. Well, to be fair, probably weren't allowed to take their baby.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that that was not something.
To be fair, like, Jones has a lot of control over these people. There are guns. Like, this is no...
Yeah.
We're getting into like malicious situation here.
Well, and if he's claiming the paternity right too.
Right. So Stowen traveled to Washington on January 1978 to visit with State Department members and members of Congress to bring to light just, you know, what was going on with Jim Jones. So this aroused the interest of a California congressman named Leo Ryan. And he wrote a letter on Stowen's behalf to the Guyanese Prime Minister Forbes Burnham. And during this time, there was also a custody battle started to get custody of Stowen's child.
Okay.
So he's trying to get him back. This concerned relatives group started handing out packets and flyers to anyone that would take one, to current temple members still in San Francisco, like everyone handing out all these things. And it was titled Accusation of Human Rights Violations by Reverend James Warren Jones. So they're trying to really...
Yeah, they're trying to take him down.
Right. They're trying to take him down or get somebody to do something.
Yeah.
By the summer of 1978, Jones was facing a lot of scrutiny, making him even more paranoid than he already was.
Damn.
So in 1978, in November, Leo Ryan, the congressman who became interested in this, led a fact-finding mission to Jonestown to investigate all of the allegations that had been flying around.
Okay. Had they asked permission or did they just show up?
They kind of just showed up.
Okay.
They just went there. They didn't let them know beforehand. They just went.
Okay.
So it's like, it's a group of relatives of temple members, an NBC news crew.
Oh, wow.
And reporters from different newspapers. So this is quite a few people in this group that are going to Jonestown. And they arrived at the Guyanese capital on November 15th. And 2 days after their arrival there, they traveled by plane to Port Kituma and were then taken to the Jonestown encampment in a limousine. So you can imagine how just out of the way this place is.
Yeah.
So you have to take a plane to another place, to a plane to another place, then to drive. So their plane is at Port Kituma, and they went to Jonestown in a limousine. I don't know why a limousine. It seems a little ostentatious.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they had a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe Jones eventually was, like, knew they were coming and decided just to run with it.
He did.
Okay.
So he hosted a reception for the delegation that evening in the Central Pavilion of Jonestown. So they were allowed to come in.
Okay.
They stayed for a couple of days, like 3 days. But they left in a rush on November 18th after a member of the temple, Don Sly, attacked Ryan, the congressman, with a knife.
Jesus.
He was thwarted, but, you know, it kind of spooked him.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, fuck this.
We're getting the fuck out of here.
We're out of here.
Where's our limousine?
Right, bring the limousine! And they actually managed to take 15 members with them when they left, and these were people who had expressed a desire to leave.
So they grabbed some people and...
They grabbed people who wanted to go. They were like, come on, let's go.
Okay.
We'll take you with us. Let's go. And Jones did not attempt to stop them.
Huh.
He was just like, okay, bye. So the group went back to Port Kituma to their plane, and they were boarding two planes at the airstrip.
Okay.
But Jones's guards, called the Red Brigade, rolled up in a tractor... And opened fire on the group.
Oh, shit.
Congressman Ryan was killed, as well as four others. At the same time, Larry Leto, who was a quote-unquote defector who had come with them, one of the 15 that they brought, drew a weapon and began to fire on those who were already on the plane.
Oh, fuck. So, like, an inside job with him acting like he's actually defecting, but I'm just gonna kill everyone instead.
Gonna try and kill everyone. NBC cameraman actually caught footage of the first few seconds of the shooting. Now, I didn't look that up because I didn't want to see it.
No. I don't know if there were kids that were part of the group that left. I can't remember. I remember hearing it.
I believe they were all adults.
Okay.
I believe so. So this happens. And then later this same day, the members of Jonestown would ingest cyanide and commit a mass suicide on Jones's orders.
Mm.
Just so you know, Jonestown consisted of 909 inhabitants that died.
Okay.
So 909 people who died. A couple escaped, but 304 of the people who died were children.
So a third of them.
A third of them were kids. And they were mostly gathered around the settlement's main pavilion. So Jones was giving a speech, basically, before the suicide. So this was the greatest single loss of American civilian life in a deliberate attack until the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Okay.
So the FBI actually found a 45-minute audio recording of the suicide in progress.
Imagine having to be the person to listen to that in the FBI.
Imagine being the person who had to walk into Jonestown with 909 people.
300 kids.
Guys, there are pictures of Jonestown online.
Yeah.
It is just families just dead on the ground holding each other. It was not a pretty sight.
Did you hear the story of, like, how one of the women survived because she was asleep?
No.
So there was a woman, I'm not going to remember her name. She was an elderly woman, and the way she survived, she was asleep when it happened. And she wakes up, and like everybody's dead.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a hell of a way to wake up.
I mean, you know, good for her.
I mean, I guess. I feel like the survival guilt from you versus 909 people is probably pretty heavy.
It probably would be.
Yeah.
I don't know, that's a hard choice to make, which one I'd rather have happen.
I know, right? Would I rather just, you know, drink the Kool-Aid? Which is, by the way, this is where drink the Kool-Aid comes from, guys. I'm about to tell you about this.
It is, and it's always fucking Kool-Aid with these people, too.
It's always Kool-Aid, because it's easy to mix stuff in Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid, it has a very strong sugary taste,
yeah.
So you won't taste any of the poison, although cyanide is tasteless.
Yeah, that's true.
So, in this recording, Jones told his members that the Soviet Union, with whom the temple had been negotiating a potential exodus for months, would not take them after the airstrip murders.
You think?
So they're like, guys, we fucked up.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. He told them that men would parachute in on them and shoot some of their innocent babies. He said they would torture their children and even the seniors.
Okay.
He argued that the group should commit revolutionary suicide by drinking cyanide-laced grape Kool-Aid.
Fucking grape, too.
Yeah, grape Kool-Aid, for whatever reason.
The bastard cousin of cherry Kool-Aid.
Yeah. But according to some members who managed to escape, children were given the drinks first by their own parents, and families were told to lie down together. The mass suicide had been discussed and even practiced with dry runs by the temple members previously to this. Yeah.
They had practiced? They knew this shit was coming.
They had suicide drills. And even one where Jones gave them poison, told them it was poison, and it wasn't actually poison.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, so he, like, psyched them out. He was like, drink this poison, which feels like a power move to me. It was like, kill yourself. And then you're like, ha, just kidding. I didn't put any poison in there.
He was testing them to see if they would actually follow through with it.
And they did. From some things that I've heard is people who didn't want to were forced to.
Yes, I heard that too. Well, and I mean, the children were obviously forced to, but I also heard that people were forced to.
People were forced to.
And
nobody was getting out alive, is Jones's plan.
Unless you were that old woman that was asleep.
Except unless you were taking a nap. So Jones was found on the floor. His head was resting on a pillow near his deck chair. And he had a gunshot wound, which was consistent with suicide.
Why does he get to?
Because he's a piece of shit. Also, it's theorized by his son that he had somebody else shoot him, by the way. But that's not, like, corroborated, so maybe not true. But his son was, like, pretty sure, which makes sense to me, because this guy sounds like a pussy.
But I've heard of that before happening with other cults or groups like this.
Yeah, because he's too scared to kill himself, so he had somebody else kill him. Would make sense to me. I mean, right along with the fucking shit that's going on here.
Yeah.
So, also, his body was dragged out and examined. And he, during an autopsy, it was shown that Jones had barbiturate pentobarbital, which is a sedative and an anticonvulsant, in his system.
Okay.
And he actually had it at levels that would have been lethal to a human who did not develop a resistance to it. So he has been fucking dosing himself for years.
Yes.
And he has so much of this in his system that any other person should have died.
Damn. So he was just this drug-crazed person that was spouting off all this crazy paranoid shit that's probably partially fueled by being on so many drugs.
Exactly. And I looked up this sedative.
Okay.
And the drug can cause paranoid or suicidal ideation and impairment of judgment and coordination.
Yep.
So there you go. The drugs probably had a lot to do with it. Also, where they found him, a sign hung above his deck chair with a Giorgi Santana quote, "Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it."
Man, that's ironic.
Like, you motherfucker, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're a son of a bitch. Do you know how many cults there are? Do you know how many, like, times this has happened throughout history?
Well, and I don't understand, like, the stories with the cults. It seems like it's always a mass suicide by drinking something. Like, taking poison?
Yeah, well, shooting takes too long. Like, you'd have to sell a lot of bullets for 909 people.
I mean, yeah, but they're a fucking militia.
I mean, I guess. Also, a machine gun. I guess, but I don't know. Maybe it's a power thing because you're getting people to kill themselves.
It's weird to me, though, that it's not this I don't know, like more intense thing where they're like slitting their own throats or they're burning this like giant wooden effigy with people in it, like Wicker Man style or something. But
I'm sure we'll talk about many more cults, but yeah. I do know that there was a cult who cut off all of their genitalia because they believed that they were going to be beamed up to a spaceship.
Oh, and yes, that's right.
The better beings had no genitalia. Like they were all, blah. Yeah. Yeah, and they also killed themselves, I think, with drinking Kool-Aid.
I think it was Kool-Aid, too. I think if it's the one I'm thinking of,
yeah,
Kool-Aid as well.
Mm-hmm. Kool-Aid as well. So Kool-Aid is apparently how you kill yourself.
I wonder if they're even getting real Kool-Aid or if it's some fucking, like, generic shit.
Where do you get cyanide?
Where
the fuck do you get that much cyanide?
Was cyanide unregulated as, like, a rat poison at some point or anything? I don't know.
I guess.
I'm just making assumptions I shouldn't make.
We'll figure it out. That's Jonestown, a horrible, horrible disaster in human history.
Ah, damn.
Yeah.
Yep.
Could have probably been prevented, but well, you know, that's how history works.
Like every single time it could have been prevented. Someone knew, the authorities mm-hmm. knew.
Families escaped.
Yes.
There was so much and still.
I don't know.
On a lighter note.
Oh yeah.
What's your animal fact of the day or animal story you got for me?
Uh-huh. So animals are assholes, as we know, and this story I found out about zombie cicadas.
Gross.
Yep.
aren't we having like a cicada reemergence right now?
There is. It's like West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina, thankfully. So it's not going to impact us.
Yay, not us.
And so this was an article published on Vice News, and the title of the article is "Invading Cicadas May Turn Into Sex-Crazed Zombies This Summer." Isn't that great?
Why is everything about sex?
Everything's about sex.
God damn it.
Yep. And so after hibernating underground for the past 17 years, because they have a 13 to 17 year hibernation period,
yeah.
The cicadas are popping back up in, like I said, Virginia, West Virginia, and North Carolina. And this hibernation period is some sort of evolutionary defense for the cicadas in order to avoid predators.
Okay, I mean, burrowing into the ground, probably a good idea.
Exactly. So, I mean, they're remaining underground, avoiding the predators, and then they just emerge in this fucking huge group.
Wait, so, question.
Yeah.
The cicadas that burrow in, are they living for 17 years and then they're coming back out? Or are they, like, mating and stuff down there and, like, making a colony and then those come out?
I think they're just hibernating. So I think that they're just
How
sleeping.
How long do they live?
That's an excellent question.
Hang on, I'll look it up while you keep telling me.
So they emerge in these huge groups and they are described as awkward and clumsy. They have little to no defenses built in.
So they're stupid.
But there's so many of them that I think that this is how they try to guarantee their survival. And according to Science Daily, so they had published an article back in 2019 talking a little bit about this whole sex-crazed zombie thing.
Mm-hmm.
And their article was titled "Flying Salt Shakers of Death."
Salt shakers?
Fungal infected zombie cicadas. Yes. It'll kind of make sense. I think it was just the fact that they're not doing shit and the mechanism of how they spread this stuff is how they came up with the name. So the cicadas have ended up encountering this fungus, which is Massapora.
Mm-hmm.
And this is happening while they're underground and it causes their abdomens to slide off of their bodies.
Ew. Ew.
It gets worse. The male cicadas begin engaging in just promiscuous mating behaviors.
Mm.
And this is despite the fact they've pretty much lost their butts and genitals.
I don't like this. This is...
So they're trying to mate and they can't. They're flying around trying to mate.
Because they lost the bit.
Yeah, they don't have that anymore.
They lost their penis.
They lost their junk. And the cicadas don't seem to realize anything is wrong despite their condition. And this is in part due to the fungus containing these hallucinogenic properties. And these hallucinogens include psilocybin.
What's psilocybin?
And that's magic mushrooms. Magic mushrooms.
Yeah. Oh, the cicadas are partying.
That is the hallucinogenic compound found in magic mushrooms, so shrooms. And they also, this fungus also contains cathinone, which is the amphetamine that we all know as bath salts. So that's where the flying salt
oh my God.
Comes from.
Oh my God.
So they are high as fuck.
Hang on too, because, okay, so yeah. We're like, you know, body parts falling off and stuff like that. Bath salts is what made that dude eat that guy's face in Florida.
Yes, it did.
So
yes, it did.
This is not like out of the realm of possibility of bath salts if that's what they've got going on.
They're Shrooming and eating bath salt.
What's wrong with 2020? What's happening? It's awful.
It's not good.
No. Also, I looked up their lifespan. They only live 17 years, so I'm guessing they have babies while they're underground.
I guess they have to, or they're like,
and then those babies are the larvae ones that come out. Or they got left in there after the last 17. Maybe they leave eggs in there, and then 17 years later they come out.
Well, and they're only out for like a very short period of time.
Yeah.
They do seem to die pretty quick after they've come out of hibernation.
Also, may I mention, cicadas are gross.
They're so big.
I hate them. They're so loud. They're so loud. So where we live, cicadas are freaking everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's like the noise of summer here. And it's awful. They're so loud. You just get used to it and it becomes like background noise. But out on my porch, I heard crying. And it sounded like my cat. I have two cats. And I was very concerned because we have a little cat door and they can go in and out onto the back porch. It's screened in.
Okay. Yeah.
And I hear like screaming. And I'm like, oh, is that my cat crying? So I jump up and I run to the door. And I waited a second because I also happen to really love horror movies and watch a lot of freaking horror stuff. And I noticed that that sound was not a cat crying. It was something crying.
Oh, God.
But it was not a cat crying. So in my brain, I automatically went to what's outside imitating a baby so that it'll kill me. And I'll come out. Like, I was
this
like,
is a trap.
This is a trap. So naturally, I screamed for my husband. And I was like, babe, the cat. I don't know. It's a weird noise. So he goes outside, he comes back in with one of our cats, Marvin, who's a fat old man.
Oh, yep, Marvin.
So he puts Marvin down, and I was like, what the fuck? And he was like, Marvin was torturing the cicada. So the cicada is just screaming for its life because my cat is just, like, playing with it, like, batting around.
Cicada's like, ah!
Yeah, that's exactly the noise that was coming from my porch. It was awful. It was awful. I was traumatized. And so then I'm like, well, you gotta get it off the porch. I was like, get it off the porch. It stopped screaming at this point, but I was like, get it off the fucking porch, because the cat obviously can't be trusted because cats are
devils,
psychotic. And so then CJ goes outside and he's like, it's not. He runs back inside. He's like, it started flying. It started flying. And I was like, oh, what am I going to do? He goes back outside with a broom and looks like he's like in warrior stance and then like slaps the wall and then flings it out the door and like closes the door. And he's like, I think I got it.
I have eliminated the threat.
So yes, cicadas make awful noises and they're awful and I hate them.
Scream like little baby aliens when they're being attacked by cats.
Yeah, so what do they scream about when they lose their abdomens?
Well, they're not, because they're fucking high.
I don't know what's happening. I don't ever want to be that high.
The problem with this, too, is that these infected cicadas are basically super spreaders of the fungus, because they're just going about their lives, trying to mate with anything.
Oh, so they're touching all the other cicadas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They are slow jamming.
Wait, are they only trying to mate with cicadas, or are they just humping everything?
I think it's just cicadas, okay, but I don't know. It seems pretty uncontrolled.
I'm going to be really upset if a cicada like jumps on me and starts like humping me with no abdomen and it's got mold on it. You know what? 2020, I'm not going outside anymore.
As long as it's not in the background going, while it's like humping you.
I'm telling you, Amanda, that was the worst scream I had ever had. Like, I was like, someone's dying. Someone's attacking my cat. And then I was like, no, something's trying to trick me, murder me.
Something is going to steal my brain and put a probe up my ass. Well, so in the scientists studying this phenomenon, and this to me just points to where we're at as a society, they have come forward to say, yes, you could get high from the chemicals present in an infected cicada.
No.
So I guess they know people are going to be like, no, I'm going to sniff this cicada.
Please don't eat cicadas.
Get all fucked up. And
please don't.
They're saying if you're motivated enough, but it could be harmful to you to do so.
Well, no shit. I'm pretty sure bath salts, like, on their own are pretty harmful. Now you're eating a bug that you have no idea where that thing's been. It's infected by a fungus.
Well, and not to mention the fungus causes you to lose your butt and your genitals.
Yeah, what's that? Whoa, oh my God. Are people's penises and stuff just going to start sloughing off?
A bunch of, like, torsos with arms and heads trying to hump everything, so.
And they're just running around and they have no idea they're missing limbs.
I better not get attacked by some fucking cicada-sniffing asshole this summer.
You know, we wonder where the zombie apocalypse is going to come from.
That'll just be the end of it.
Cough, cough. Yeah. Actually, my theory on that is that rabies is going to become airborne. That's the zombie virus.
I mean,
because you're never going to be able to reanimate a dead body.
It's
just not going to happen.
Semen. You got to screw a hole in the skull.
It's semen. You know it's semen.
Lord God.
We should have an episode just purely on medical
science 101.
No, like medical things that people believed back in the day.
Haven't you seen Bill Nye?
Like, you know, they drill holes to release demons if you're crazy. Yeah.
They drill holes just for the fuck of it, I think. Like, they drilled holes for all kinds of reasons.
Did they not realize that, like, having an open hole in your head is, like, bad?
Wasn't happening to them. They didn't care.
I guess. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, so.
So that's our episode, guys.
Yeah.
Jonestown and zombie humping cicadas.
Zombie cicadas. Buttless, genitalless zombie cicadas.
Check us out. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Yep. Give us some feedback. Drop us a line. Yeah. Tell us if you have
start
any.
Start doing some little.
Tell us if you have any stories you'd like us to share.
And we're going to do some, you know, interactive stuff. Ask you guys some questions and, you know, get you involved.
Heck yeah.
So we'll see you next time.
See you then. Bye.